I call this meeting of House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it's 1:33 p.m. on Tuesday, February 21. Present today, Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Flom, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, and Co-Chair Edgman, and Representative Staff. And myself, Co-Chair Johnson. Assisting us today is our LIO moderator, Emma Turner, and our finance secretary, Leah Frazier. And we are going to be receiving a budget overview from the Department of Public Safety, presented by James Cockrell, Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Commissioner Cockrell, would you come forward, place yourself on the record, and if you would like to introduce any additional presenters, and welcome to House Finance. You may begin your presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm James Cockrell. I'm the Commissioner of Alaska Department of Public Safety. To my left is Pam Halloran. She's our finance director. And on my further left is Deputy Commissioner Brian Barlow, also with the Commissioner's Office. And we do have a few of our staff behind us for some support.
Welcome.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Johnson, or chairman, or chairperson, sorry. I'd like to make a quick opening statement, if I could, and then we'll get on with our presentation.
Certainly.
First of all, I want to thank you and the representatives here, and also to our subcommittee representatives. We had what I consider a very open and dialogue and lots of conversation about what our department does. After years, I've actually kind of gotten a written statement, usually I don't do this, but after years of budget cuts, the Department of Public Safety is finally making positive movement forward thanks to the legislature and the current administration. Last year, we were given new resources, which turned into new positions, public safety, and positive public safety results for our state. The overall crime rate in Alaska is down to 1974 levels, based on our most current UCR reports. We have seized millions of doses of fentanyl at our airports, partial facilities, and elsewhere around the state. Our drug enforcement agents, or troopers, are, and task force officers are busy. Just recently, we seized 20 pounds off the state ferry headed to Juneau. We've hired two investigators to focus directly on missing and murdered Indigenous people, and we're really proud of that. I'd like to see that grow over the future. We have revitalized our VPSO program, and we'll talk about it a little bit later because I'm very proud of the steps that we've made in our VPSO program. We're up to 68 VPSOs this year. And a half ago, we had 45 that were boots on the ground. We are moving forward, as many of you know, with our body-worn camera program. We hope to have them fully insulated, or installed, or our troopers with them with it sometime this summer. We see that as a way to have transparency on what we do as a law enforcement agency. It also, I think, instills trust with our citizens that we serve, and also protects our troopers. So it's a win-win for everyone. Together, we have accomplished a lot, and I hope that together we can continue to build on these positive improvements and make Alaska the safest state in the country to live, work, and raise our families. And with that, we'll start our presentation. Thank
you. Very good. Thank you.
To the chair, I think I get the first few slides, and then I'll pass it on to the experts. But when I took over the department a few years ago, one of the things I wanted to do was set up our key objectives as a department to meet our mandate. And that is to recruit and retain the best possible, not only troopers, CSOs, VPSOs, but also our professional administrative technical staff. We continue to focus our efforts in rural Alaska. That's certainly been a priority of mine since I've been in this department. We've included more positions in what I call rural Alaska. That's everything from Kodiak all the way up to Kotzebue, but also includes parts of southeastern and parts of our interior Alaska. We still focus, and still one of our primary focuses, is to try to alleviate the amount of domestic violence and sexual assaults we have in this state. We still, unfortunately, we talk about it every year, either in press releases or comments, but we still lead the nation per capita on sexual assault and domestic violence, and we have to continue to focus on that. We talked about the Village Public Safety Officer Program. That is key to the direction that this department wants to continue on. We want a vibrant wildlife troopers that are out protecting our resources, for everybody has a fair opportunity to take fishing game in our state. And we also focus on major crime investigations. That includes homicides, assaults, sexual assaults, and drug investigations. We currently have 982 permanent full-time staff. We also have 12 permanent part-time staff. And those part-time or part-time investigators that we focus directly on specific problems, like our two MMIP investigators, are actually long-term, non-perm, retired troopers that came back to the department. And our current budget, I think this is the GovMN budget, is just under $300 million. We have a statewide impact. There's probably not another department in the state other than maybe Department of Administration that has the footprint in this as large as ours in the state. We provide professional law enforcement patrols and investigations around the state. We have a top-notch crime lab in our state. Probably there's very few crime labs in the state that can touch what we can do. We provide first-rate resource protection around the state. Again, we're focusing on domestic violence, sexual assault, victim services programs. We've got Diane Caskell behind us, who is the domestic violence, sexual assault executive director. We specialize in high activity patrols. We conduct around 500 to 600 search and rescues a year. We also maintain a public safety information network. Here's kind of a high overview of our org chart. I don't know if we really need to go into it that deeply. I know that time is of essence. If there's no questions, I'll pass through our org chart.
You know, what I would like to hear a little bit about is, you know, well, you had said how you had been there for a number of years, but also if you would just kind of hit the high points on maybe your division directors and the, you know, the number of years they have been with your department.
Through the chair, I think I can do that. I'm going to have to put my glasses on. We have the Alaska State Trooper Division that is, the colonel there is Maurice Hughes. He's been with the Alaska State Troopers for over 30 years. He and I came in fairly close together. I actually had the pleasure to promote him into that position. Our colonel for the Alaska Wildlife Troopers is Bernard Chastain. He has over 25 years with the department. And again, I had the honor to actually appoint him to that position. We've got our Fire Life Safety Director, Lloyd McConnell. He's been with the department over 20 years. And then for our Village Public Safety Officer, which is the interim director, that's retired Colonel Joel Hart. He has over 20 years with the Alaska State Troopers and also around 20 years with the National Park Service. We got Administrative Director Pam Hollerin, and I don't know how many years she has on with what she's doing.
I have been with the department since last June.
Thank you.
So with the state, a little bit longer than that.
So through the chair, that's basically my division directors.
So many of them are close to retirement, or retirement age.
Many of them. Through the chair, most of our command staff level from lieutenant above are eligible for retirement right now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, for the record, my name is Pam Hollerin. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the department, and there's a question.
Madam Chair.
Oh.
Through the chair.
Representative Ortiz.
yes, directing back to Commissioner Cockrell. Under your slide for key objectives, rural Alaska law enforcement and safety, has there been an assessment to this point as to how the consolidation of dispatch services has contributed to accomplishing your key objective of improved law enforcement and safety in rural Alaska. In other words, has there been any kind of assessment as to when that project took place? Now we're into it for a couple of years, I guess, maybe more than that. Is that contributing to improved law enforcement safety enforcement in rural Alaska, or is it? Has there been any assessment of that? Let's put it down.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I will say we have a long ways to go when it comes to providing, I'll call it 911 service to from rural Alaska. We still certainly have our two contract dispatch centers, one in Matthew Valley, one in Kenai, provides us professional support in those two areas. The one area that we still struggle on is trying to get adequate dispatch services to areas of Western Alaska. We've been working with one telco company to upgrade the cell towers to phase two compliant. That way, when we do get a 911 call, say out of the community, I'll just say Quinnahawk, it hits that tower, it'll hit the trunk line, and we'll know exactly whom, or at least the telephone number and location where that phone call was made. Currently, in most of the areas of the state, we don't have that ability to do that. I mean, that's a process that will take cooperation from the Department of Public Safety and the telecommunication companies to make that work better than it currently is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I was going to wait to this question about Representative Ortiz. So how many 911 calls in rural Alaska get dropped?
Through the chair, all I got, now we're talking 911 in Western Alaska. I've been told up to 25%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, once again, for the record, Pam Hallard, Administrative Services Director. I'm going to take you through the remaining portion of the slide deck until the last few slides. I'm going to go fairly quickly so that we can allow plenty of time for questions. But just want to say that I'm also happy to be here, and thank you for the subcommittee, Rep. Colomb and Rep. Hannon, for their wonderful work thus far. Our first slide, if I can turn to it, basically reflects our budget, specifically our FY24 Governor Amend request, which is almost $300,000, as the commissioner said, with our supplemental, and we're showing it with our supplemental because that contributes to the request. It's essentially a $14 million increase over FY23 management plan and the supplemental. A lot has gone into our request, and I don't want to reiterate what OMB Director Neil Steininger already shared with this committee in regard to our ratification and supplemental. But I will say that there were many contributing factors that contributed to our request. And essentially, this request is to align our budget with our expenditures as they occur. It's focusing on meeting costs associated with our high rising costs regarding our fleet vehicles. It's associated with funding positions that were either underfunded or unfunded. Getting support staff so that our troopers can be out in the field doing their primary duties. And in regard to the supplemental, I can just say that I was brought on in June, and I came from another state agency that was very similar to public safety. It was a very reactive agency. It was the Office of Children's Services, where I managed their budget for 5 years. And so I know what it's like to be in a reactive agency. And I am working with our leadership team and my DAS team to establish controls and transparency in regard to our budgets and expenditures.
Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Quick question. We're looking down the list here. You got unrestricted general funds designated. What is other?
Other for our agency is a couple things. It's interagency authority, and it's also in the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, as well as our Violent Crimes Compensation Board, they receive other funds in the form of restorative justice account funds.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm curious to know if other is also part of working on the collaboration between DPS and telecommunications. When I heard 25% dropped calls, it sure helps me to understand how we got to our rate of domestic violence, because that first call is so critical. And so I just wondered if that other is also working toward that, or where is that piece of work?
Representative Galvin, through the chair. No, the answer to that is no. The other is primarily a mechanism and a type of fund source that agencies use to provide services to each other. Mm-hmm. And any telecom and services would be under on our services line.
Okay. And follow up, if I may?
Follow up.
Would you help to guide me to know where that funding would need to be in order to help work with the telecommunications entities to help us strengthen that, if needed, if you have a plan for that?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, if I can answer the question. I would say the funding on the state side, at least from our department perspective, is it the issue? The issue is the amount of money that it's going to cost the telco companies to get there, and we're talking specifically now cell towers to get them up to phase two compliant. I mean, it's something the department cannot force, but certainly there should be an obligation on their part to provide adequate funding to provide communications that somebody that lives in one of their villages can call 911 and get a person that answers it, and we know exactly what village we're talking to, and at least the telephone number if the person's name doesn't come up on it.
A second follow-up, if I may?
Second follow-up.
Okay. If you would help us, guide us to know how we might better impact the telecommunications agency. I guess this is more of a comment for us as a body to consider what it would take to encourage to the companies, corporations to be citizens of our state and help work with you to make sure that you're able to deliver the services that are so important to every Alaskan, not just those who live in the city.
Well, the good news is we do have a lot of broadband money coming in. Perhaps our communication systems will grow organically and be helpful to all of our departments. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, to Director Halloran. So just want to clarify one thing that you mentioned earlier in terms of the budget and the supplemental on the current slide. So you had stated that there were positions that were in the vacancy rate, rather positions that were not funded or partially funded. So my understanding is basically we have a supplemental request mainly for payroll due to overtime. Did we not have any salary savings from unfunded positions, or none of those positions are just not funded? Can you just clarify that for me?
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, that's a very large question. So the supplemental, for starters, is not covering payroll. There's some payroll that rolled into the ratification. So there's two things in the supplemental bill. There's a supplemental which addresses cost overages that we anticipate occurring in FY23. The ratification covers cost overages that we were unable to address because we essentially ran out of budget authority in FY22, and that was payroll. So that's two part. That's separating out the ratification and the supplemental. The supplemental is primarily on our travel and services and commodities lines. But you're also asking about payroll and vacancies, and I wanted to address that. Am I on the right track? Because you look.
Quick follow-up, Madam Chair. If I could clarify. So my understanding is that there's a specific request because of overtime, basically hours incurred, in the supplemental budget through DPS. I could be wrong. So the nucleus of my question is, my thought is positions that were funded that were not filled, that would incur some sort of salary savings that would be used to cover overtime So the funding request is in addition to that. Is that correct? Or am I just off base?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to nod through the chair, Representative Stepp. Positions that aren't funded would hit our personal services line without budget authority, without being budgeted, so that would further impact any savings by vacant positions.
Okay.
So, and I could walk you through the supplemental if you want
no,
to do that as well. Okay.
All right, thank you. Next up, we have Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Ms. Halloran, the IA authority tells me that your department's billing another sister agency. That's how I hear that. Who are you billing?
Well, a lot of that authority is we're billing each other. So our different divisions are providing services to each other. For example, some of our Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault provides some funding to the Alaska State Troopers to handle some domestic violence training and awareness for our troopers. We also, similar to the Department of Administration, we provide, we charge our divisions for services provided by the Commissioner's Office or Administrative Services. We also RSA money to the courts, and that to the courts, we are trying to think of who else. We have an RSA agreement with the Department of Corrections for an investigator position.
Okay, that's all. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
And you've referred to ratification. Is that ratification of a new PSEA contract? Is that what you mean?
No, a ratification is part of the supplemental bill, which provides for a mechanism for us to capture costs that we couldn't capture in FY22 because our expenditures exceeded our authorization.
Okay.
Follow-up?
So you have, we heard yesterday from the fire service how they can get emergency declarations and the governor can dip into the treasury on his own unilaterally, which is great. Mm-hmm. You can't do that, right? So you have outstanding bills and you need them ratified? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. We have outstanding bills. So our employees were essentially paid in FY22 because they're paid, and then the accounting system didn't allow for those expenditures to actually hit the accounting system. And so we need the ratification process allows us to come to the legislature and request appropriation to essentially put those expenditures on the books.
Thank you.
Okay, so I was about ready to talk about the supplemental, so I've lost track. So let's. Now we're going to run through our various divisions and councils and boards. First is our Fire and Life Safety Division, and that is on slide 7. And this division consists of the Plan Review Bureau, the Life and Safety Inspection Bureau, the Bureau of Accreditation Standards and Time, and the Alaska Fire Standards Council. This division performs building inspections and plan reviews and works closely with our village public safety officers to improve fire safety in rural Alaska. Moving on to slide 8.
We have a question from Representative Kronk.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 32 full-time positions. Where are all those positions based out of?
I have it in my notes, someone here, but I don't want to take the time. I know, primarily Anchorage, but we also have deputy fire marshals based in Bethel and Fairbanks. Any other places that I'm
not currently?
Bethel and Fairbanks.
Thank you.
Moving on to slide 8, this is the look back FY22 to the FY24 Governor's Amend request. The budget is just over $7 million with a $300,000 increase over FY23, which is for a deputy fire marshal in Juneau that will allow us to provide faster investigations in fire instances in Southeast Alaska as well as preserve evidence. Moving on to slide 9 is the Alaska State Troopers Division. Where are my notes? So there, I've lost track of myself. Okay, it's by far, this is by far our largest division. Over 60% of our budget request is within this division. The division operates four detachments, which are regions, a robust drug interdiction program, criminal investigations, search and rescue coordination, law enforcement, and court services. The division also includes our Alaska Wildlife Division, so we call that, or I call that, a division within a division. Slide 11 reflects the Alaska State Troopers budget request. This is where the majority of that supplemental occurred in our budget, and their request is just under $182 million.
I have a question on that. This is a big supplemental. I mean, not supplemental. It's a big, the governor's amend is a big increase in Department of Public Safety. I think it may be the biggest add. And I guess what I'm, our department add. And so I'm, percentage-wise anyway. Anyway, so what I was wondering is what happened between December and, I mean, why is this coming in now and not, wasn't in the original budget?
Chair Johnson, I can say that there were decisions made in government by the governor's office that made, I mean, I perhaps we were looking at oil money. I mean, and oil money and deciding what to put forward in December versus what to put forward now. I can say that the requests in Governor's Amend are extremely important to keep us out of a ratification or supplemental situation in future years. The requests, there's a request that's over $2 million to align with actual costs for our vehicles. There's a request that aligns services authority for our Alaska Wildlife Troopers because their services authority essentially chargebacks, monies owed to the Department of Administration for services provided by the Department of Administration, such as OIT and HR, exceeded their total authorization and then some. So we're essentially looking back at things that cost more now. So we did a deep dive into items such as uniforms, ballistic vests, vehicles, costs for services, costs for mental health services that we provide for our troopers when they experience horrible things in the field, costs, trying to remember some of the additional costs, costs for to upkeep make equipment. We went in and we looked at those actual costs in FY21 and we compared them with actual costs in 22. And that work was important because we knew that we were in a cost overrun situation in FY22, and we essentially requested the difference.
All right. Thank you.
Moving on to our Village Public Safety Officer Program. This program consists of 10 regional programs managed by regional tribes and tribal organizations that include grant funds to perform statutorily required fundamental purposes that include fire prevention and suppression, emergency medical support, search and rescue, probation and parole activities, investigations, enforcing criminal laws, and providing public safety training.
Question. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, at the outset, Commissioner, you said there are 68 VPSOs. We've got about 230 villages. Some of them are, of course, significant hubs. Then there are VPOs. So a typical village has no law enforcement at all? Is that a fair statement?
Through the chair. Representative Jefferson.
Present on the ground.
Pardon me.
I apologize. In other words, no present on the ground law enforcement.
Let me, I'll get to that.
Sure.
Essentially, right now we have 65 or 68 BPSOs that are boots on the ground in many different villages around the state. The department, the state, and has underserved rural Alaska since statehood. And the only way that we're going to be able to serve the state, all the state, not just our urban areas, is to focus more resources in rural Alaska. That includes the villages out in the YK Delta, the TCC area out of Fairbanks, and the Bristol Bay region. I will say that a lot of the villages have, some of the villages have troopers in it. We've spread out our aquaculture trooper empire to some of our smaller villages like Imani, Selowik, Hooper Bay. Those places are two and two, and there's would be very unlikely that we could get a family to live there full time. So we've opted to go to two and two. There's a cost to doing that because it takes us, for one position, it actually takes us two to two and a half positions to fill that post. But, I mean, that's something that we're focused on. I will say there's many villages in rural Alaska that doesn't have any law enforcement. We do have villages, especially with the amount of cop grants out there, that have village public police officers that have a minimum level of training. We also have tribal police officers. That's becoming a lot more prevalent in our urban areas, our rural areas, I'm sorry. I can't give you a number of how many villages, I can only guesstimate. But again, at some point, the state's going to have to decide what level of services we're going to provide areas that are in a huge disadvantage to our urban areas.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Commissioner Cockrell. What is the minimum age for a VPSO officer?
VPSO officer is 18.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And can I touch on the VPSO program, to the chair? Can I touch on it a little bit more?
Yes.
I don't know how much time we got. The VPSO program and the VPSOs, the grantees, and our department work very close together to ensure that we fill all our positions. Under last year where we passed the VPSO bill, it's given the department a lot more flexibility how we deploy our VPSOs, how we pay our VPSOs, and the support we provide our VPSOs. We've actually got money in our last budget, and I think government to actually continue to look at housing and office spaces for our VPSOs. And they are so critical to the mission of the Department of Public Safety Division of Alaska State Troopers. We'd be in really tough shape if we didn't have the program. The program needs to continue to grow. They don't do just law enforcement. They do firefighting. They do search and rescues, medical assists. They pretty much do everything in those villages. And you cannot have, in my opinion, you cannot have a village that prospers if they don't feel safe. Safety comes prosperity. And a lot of those areas in our state are not represented by law enforcement. And that's shameful, in a sense. It really is. We need to do better.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I just wanted to make a comment here in finance. I've served on the subcommittee for public safety for 4 years, and I would say a bright spot in our public safety mission in the 4 years I've served is the Village Public Safety Officer Program. I think a change in the commissioner, a change in policy where it moved out of Alaska State Troopers as a subsection of that into the commissioner's office, and that attention and change in the law to allow two people to be posted in the same community, because prior to that change, it was one person in the community. And, anyone who looks into public safety and you hear about community policing, Alaska State Troopers aren't really designed to do community policing. They serve the state in rapid fashion in response to 911. But a true community policing opportunity exists with village public safety officers. And under your guidance and leadership in the last 2 years, we seem to have made a turn to be approaching what we need vision-wise to move that forward. We're not I don't believe we're there in the number that we need on the ground, but at least the attitude and approach to building towards that is there, and I thank you for that leadership.
Representative McClellan.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, nice to see you again. So two questions around VPSOs. One is, are the VPSOs armed? And two, what accountability for someone who has bad behavior? Do they go through the Police Standard Council, or do they? Who are they accountable if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, or if there's a complaint against a VPSO?
Through the chair, first I'll get your, I think your first question. Essentially, could you repeat that again? I'm sorry.
I asked if they were armed.
Currently, we do not have any VPSOs that are armed. There is statutory authority. Actually, Representative Edmund got it through when Thomas Madal in Manicotic was shot and killed, responding to a domestic violence incident. We've had two VPSOs that have been shot and killed since the VPSO program started. But currently, there's the statutory authority to do it. However, there's no VPSOs that are currently armed. And I'll let the D.C. handle, since he handles Alaska Police Standards, the second part of your question.
Thank you. Madam Chair, for the record, Deputy Commissioner Brian Barlow, Department of Public Safety. I guess to answer your question there, if there's, internal investigations that need to be done, those are, they're not certified, but they are certainly investigated internally by their employers, and the Department of Public Safety does assist in that, if that answers your question.
Through the chair.
Follow-up? Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So what do you mean, investigated by their employers? What do you mean by that?
Well, they're not employees of the Department of Public Safety. They're employees of the nonprofit organizations that they're assigned or employed by.
Okay, thank you.
And just in, we do appreciate the questions, but just in recognition, as we're the Finance Committee, and we would like to, if we could keep our questions to the budget and how that's reflected in policy and as we move forward. Otherwise, we're all fascinated by public safety, and we might be here for a really long time. So, and Co-Chair Edgman.
Yeah, I also as well wanted to thank the department for their focus on the VPSO program, but to be completely fair, I wanted to thank the coordinators as well, because they were a big part of the VPSO working group that myself and Senator Giesel appointed back in 2019, I think it was. But it's really been a team effort to bring the VPSO program to where it is now, back to where Commissioner Masters had it, I think, with 121 VPSOs or something like that back in the heyday during the Parnell administration. My quick question is, I see interim before Colonel Hard's designation. I thought he was the permanent. No?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, no, he's a full time part-time position. I had to go down and talk to him and his wife to talk him into the job. I brought him in for two reasons. One, stability of the program. He's a great communicator, great collaborator, and he's worked hand in hand with the grantees to build the program. And before, you know, the program has bounced around the trooper agency since its inception. And I could understand why the department went that direction, but it really wasn't working. It was nobody's fault. It wasn't the trooper's fault. It was the structural fault. So we decided to move the VPSO program directly into the commissioner's office, put a director in there, and that's what the request is, to put a full-time director in there, because Colonel Hard wants to go back to building his house, and because he's retired twice now. But to put a full-time director in there, and that person will answer to the commissioner. And he's also on the same level as our other directors, our two colonels, our fire marshal, and our directors in statewide services. So it adds a little bit more oomph when there's an issue with the program. And it keeps that accountability up at the commissioner's level. So if the program fails, it's up to the commissioner to fix it.
And it's up to the commissioner to take responsibility for it if it does fail. And we're committed to not letting it fail.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you for that, Commissioner. Can you jog my memory? It wasn't that long ago that the VPSO program was on the Division of State Troopers. And how many years ago was that? Maybe a question to the Admin Services Director.
Through the Chair, I can answer that. I mean, since the inception of the VPSO program, it was in the Division of Alaska State Troopers. It would either go to, when I had it as the Colonel of the Alaska State Troopers, I had a captain in charge of it, so I oversaw the program. Prior to that, it's been to a detachment commander. It just depends on who the colonel is or who the commissioner is. What I want to do is I want to cement it in the commissioner's office. And the way to do that is get a director that answers directly to the commissioner. And it's been in that place now. Joel or Colonel Hart's been in there for about a year and a half.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair. Commissioner, has... I'm trying to recall the department, and that's why I'm asking, where OMB, I guess, if I understand the pecking order, has asked the department to eliminate positions it can't fill. Is yours one of those departments?
Through the chair, it was under the previous administration, but I've not ever been asked to delete any positions in our department since I've been the commissioner.
Thank you.
Seeing no additional questions, go ahead and continue on.
Thank you for the record, Pam Halloran, Administrative Services Director. Village Public Safety Officers Program budget, we saw a rather large increase in government associated with 10 additional Village Public Safety Officers, as well as some housing and office, some funds for housing and offices for them as well, and that reflects that $20 million request. Moving on to our statewide support division, this is slide 14. This division houses our commissioner's office, administrative services, and our statewide services division that houses our crime lab, our criminal justice information systems program, our Alaska Public Safety Information Services agency, as well as information systems. Much of the work that comes out of this division reaches many agencies and communities throughout Alaska. The budget request for our statewide support division is just over $53 million, a $2.8 million increase over FY23 management plan. Moving on, our next slide is the Alaska Police Standards Council. And... I seem to have lost my notes. Would you like to take the last? Here it is. It provides for training and ensures compliance standards for training for police, corrections officers, probation officers, parole officers, and municipal corrections offices. And there's no significant budget request for the Alaska Police Standards Council. Moving on to the Council of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and I believe our Commissioner Cockrell wanted to take this.
No, I go for it.
Okay. So we're now on slide 19. The Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, through grants, supports prevention, victim services, and rehabilitation programs all the way from Utqiagvik all the way down to Ketchikan through a variety of activities and strategies. The FY24 request for the council is just under $32 million. Moving on to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. They facilitate payments of compensation to innocent persons who are victims of crimes such as homicide, assault, arson, child abuse, sexual assault, driving under the influence, and robbery. And expenditures under this agency can include funerals, burials, can't talk today, lost wages, medical, relocation, security, and crime scene cleanup, as well as travel.
Rep,
Would you like to add to that, Commissioner Cronk?
If it's acceptable to you and Representative Cronk, I would. I would say that VCCB, will call it that. It's easier for me to say, but we inherited that about a year and a half from Department Administration. By statute, it was set up in 1973. We had three employees in 1973 and 15 claims. Now, almost 40 years later, we have three employees and we're receiving over 1,000 claims. And we've asked for two positions. We see those critical, providing support not only to VCC but to our victims of violent crime. And, you know, once you start digging into it, I really didn't know what VCC was to came to our department. And the amount of support that they give victims, a lot of times they're in a different social class than we are, just cannot afford it. Whether they get punched in the face during an assault, we have to have dental work done. I would say it's a valuable asset to our state to be able to provide support to victims of violent crimes. The only, we're asking for two positions. The only caveat to that, the positions are not funded, so the fund's going to come out of the restorative justice, out of the permanent fund for people that are currently incarcerated. And my fear is that will reduce the amount of awards to our victims. I just wanted to leave this.
Okay. Moving on to the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, the budget request is $4.2 million, just over 4.2, which is quite an increase for this board, which is associated with some stabilization associated with this program, as the commissioner said. We've seen a lot of growth in the number of claims. And there's a large increase in a fund source of other here, which is those Restorative Justice Act funds to support this agency. It's also going to support two positions, a paralegal and an administrative officer, and all salaries for everybody in this board would come out of that Restorative Justice account, which is somewhat unnerving for us because it's a volatile fund source for this agency because it's based on the amount of the PFD.
Representative Cronk, did you have a question?
I do, but I can wait until you're already done.
Okay.
That concludes our presentation.
Such a patient.
I think that's your cue, Representative Paul.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm just going. You don't have to go back to the slide, but I'm looking at the VPSO. What is your target number? What is your target number for VPSOs, and do you have any new or future partnerships? Working together to add those VPSOs.
To the chair, Representative Cronk. I guess my short term one is continue to program at a rate that we can hire VPSOs. I feel that's about 10 per year extra. So currently we're funded for 65. I'd like to get us up to, Representative Edgman said, at least to where the Parnell administration was at 121, and I think we had 118 at the highest level, and continue to grow that program. And I've actually got some notes here. But essentially, that's where I'm at right now, is get us up to the 120 level, and hopefully we can maintain it. Because there appears to be a magic number that we can keep our trooper positions filled, and it seems to be the same way with the VPSO program. But we need to continually focus on providing more support for the program and also more support for our rural areas. They're getting devastated by violent crime.
Thank you. Follow up.
I'm
changing now. I'm going to change subject. So, I think some of the programs you have of getting troopers out into their village, like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And I know we had this conversation, but I think this is something we have a conversation about, especially with new troopers. I think the more experience you have, the more money you make. But for new troopers that, let's say they're based in Wasilla, they're renting a home or they're buying a home, and they're out in
wherever for 2 weeks. And the conversation is the compensation make, is it worthwhile for them to be actually doing that? Or is it actually costing them money to be out there for 2 weeks? Now, I know the more experience you have, probably the more money you're going to make. But for, you know, if we're scheduling our new troopers out there, I'm really concerned about that because it's already a tough thing for them to do, be gone for 2 weeks from a place they're either buying or renting. So just your thoughts on that.
All right. To the chair, I'll try to navigate this one. Basically, I would say that there is a financial advantage going out to a 2-2 post, depending on their seniority and the post they're going to. I will say that the decision that department administration made a few years back to reduce the COLA from 100% COLA to 50% since they weren't living there full-time has affected that, and it's affected our ability to get troopers out there because a trooper that's currently in Fairbanks or Matsu Valley are getting acute because they don't, our troopers on 202 don't really get any overtime. But the troopers in the valley or Fairbanks or the Kenai Peninsula or some of the other posts are getting overtime. So it kind of balances up. But they're only maintaining one home. Essentially, our 2-2 troopers, they're still paying rent regardless. They don't give them free rent out there. And they're also carrying a home. And so there can be some disadvantage, especially for the younger troopers. And we still, as an agency, are struggling with getting more troopers out to rural Alaska. We just lost a fine trooper from the Kenai Peninsula because that person didn't want to go out to rural Alaska and had multiple years with our department and other departments. But so we still have to, that's why decent livable housing is important for them. Even office space, internet, we're working on trying to get internet to some of our posts. There's things that we can do to make that duty better. But again, it doesn't come for free. I mean, those things cost our department. But it's a balance. Do we want law enforcement out in those facilities? Do they deserve it? They do. But the problem is the state has never really fully grasped that concept. So we're still stuck in the 1960s on how we enforce or provide services to those rural areas. Nothing's changed. My dad was a rural trooper in 67 on the Yukon River. We're still doing the darn same thing, but we're not putting troopers in those facilities, most of those areas. And I don't necessarily say it has to be troopers, but it can be BPSOs, but a higher level than a VPO or a TPO. I mean, they cannot prosper. I mean, the amount of victimization that we have out there is outlandish. I mean, if that was happening in Anchorage or in my hometown of Soldotna, people would be upraised. And we'd have a picket line out on the street or something if we had the crime that we're having in some of our villages. When are we going to stand up and say we're going to focus on that? And that's certainly a focus of this department, and we'll make every effort to do it. The colonel or the deputy commissioner, he's the one that put the investigators out in Bethel, in the Bristol Bay region, up in the Norton Sound region. We got major crime investigators now investigating major crimes that are occurring out. We had a homicide last week in Selloway where the body was dumped at the dump. We made an arrest there. I mean, that's kind of where we're at. I mean, we're totally committed to providing professional law enforcement services in the state, no matter what your zip code is, and we'll continue. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. When we're not perfect, it makes the newspapers, right? But we try to be perfect. We try to do the right things. And we care for the people that we serve. Every one of us do. All our troopers do. We just got to be given the chance. And I see these hearings as so critical to what we do because you should know as lawmakers what your law enforcement, state law enforcement, what we represent and what we're doing out there. There shouldn't be any secrets. There's not one secret here. You can ask me about anything except personnel issue, and I'll tell you. And that's why these are I really value these because of the ability to talk to you, understand what your concerns are, and understand this is not just the department. It's just not the legislature, but we're a team, the team to make Alaska better and safer.
Follow up, Rep. Cronk, then we have Representative Josephson and Representative Stapp.
Thank you, through the chair. Oh, thank you for that. And I guess I think you hit it. you know, I'm a short timer here. I've only been here. This is my third year. But it seems that, you brought it up, status quo has always been good enough for us, and we're not willing to think out of the box and do what's right. So I appreciate that comment, because I think it's, you know, just because we've done it in the past doesn't mean we can keep doing that. So thank you for that.
Representative Stapp, then Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Director Halloran, I believe. So I'm going to kind of go back to the first question I offered. So I had my folks pull me the supplemental from FY23, and in the supplemental budget request from FY23, it says that positions that were budgeted for that you did end up hiring, they were not funded adequately because it states that you needed to buy new vehicles and new trooper equipment in order to actually have the equipment and stuff needed for the trooper in order to do their job. So it states that FY23 trooper positions were added without adequate funding. The line item is in commodities and capital outlays. So my question is, for these new positions that we are looking to hire troopers for, are we including the cost of actually equipping those troopers, or is that going to come in a supplemental in the event that we hire those folks?
Those positions, excuse me, through the chair, Representative Stapp, those positions have been allocated to the department without funding. And when we receive positions, there's all kinds of costs associated with positions, including outfitting them with a vehicle. When you add a position, there's things that you need, including a new vehicle. And so those vehicles are in the FY23 supplemental request, yes. And we will order them as soon as the supplemental comes through and get them the vehicles they need.
Can I follow up, or Chair? I'm not sure that I understand your question. There's only three positions that we decided not to fill, and those are three wildlife positions because we didn't get any funding for it. We've never, ever not filled positions we couldn't have it. We put 51 troopers through the academy last year. Not one decision was made, well, that position wasn't funded. We get positions that are funded, and we figure it out. And so I'm sure I understand your question, but if your question is, are we holding back hiring troopers and buying other stuff? Absolutely not.
Yeah. Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Let me try to clarify. That's not my question. My question is, so what I'm trying to understand the process here. So we're budgeting positions, right? And I would just want to make sure that when we budget for you guys to hire someone, that we're actually including all the costs to hire. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, that does. And we do have a formula that if we have a new position, what we purchase from the firearms to the uniforms, and the computer. So yes, we do. And even with our professional civilian staff, we do the same thing. There are some incidentals.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Josephson. And go ahead.
Through the chair, Commissioner, a couple of years ago, we got extra dollars from a grant from the U.S. Justice Department and Attorney General Barr, and there was a lot of fanfare about that, centered around at the time a context where there was a lot of national media about lack of attention to rural justice in Alaska. Did all of that energy result in a shift, in permanent shift in our position vis-a-vis rural justice? Or did that fanfare, as I described it, sort of melt away and we're sort of back in a status quo posture?
To the chair, first of all, the money that was through Attorney General Barr, there was several different avenues for that money. The department received through money, pass-through money, but we didn't actually receive any money directly. It went to, my understanding, went to Commerce. Commerce handled the grants for building, housing, and stuff. That's what it was designated for. I would say, on the second part of your question, you know, I'd hate to say that we're status quo, because I think as a department we're always looking at ways to provide our services better, even though in the long picture of where we went from as a department, I think some of it looks the same, but we're
we're always looking at ways to better our services. And that requires, you know, realistically support from not only the administration, but from the legislature. What we have, and you can look at our graphs from other budget years, it goes up and down. We never have a consistent, I'll call it a consistent fund source. We're still digging out of the hole that the previous administration left us with, you know, 40 trooper positions they cut and 40 staff positions they cut. We still haven't even got to the number of positions we had when those cuts occurred in 15 and 16, and we're working our way through it. We've made so much positive momentum in the last few years, and again, it's a team effort. It's the administration, it's the legislature, both branches, and it's us to make sure that we meet the obligations that you put forth, and that's usually budget-wise or intent languages in your budget. I mean, we're here to serve the people. We really are. And it's a slow process. It's a slow process to get more troopers or BPSOs in our communities between the training and getting housing or trying to find housing for them and actually making it work. It's a process.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Josephson, then Representative Ortiz.
Commissioner, on the subject of VPSOs, and I know I'm not supposed to run too far afield from the budget, but this is the budget, and it's certainly relevant, I think, to any discussion of the spending cap and what is it we're trying to achieve. We don't treat VPSOs. I understand there's always a pecking order in life. You're the Olympic team, and they're important players, and I don't mean to minimize them, but they're in a different level of training, et cetera. But they're not peace officers. They're not organized. They don't, for example, under a bill that I was very involved in, if they're killed in the field, their family doesn't get health insurance. So they're in this band of sort of coverage that is substantially different. Should they be, partly to promote and elevate and retain, should they be moved up a notch in a real definitive way?
Well, through the chair, and I don't know about the pecking order, I see them on essentially one-on-one with our troopers in the field. And our feedback we're getting from our grantees is that our troopers are really providing the necessary support that they need. I will say that one thing that we are looking at is another level of VPSO. We call it an RPSO. Regional Public Safety Officer is in statute. It was actually designed for the Division of Alaska State Troopers to hire a person that lives in a community, let them at a higher level. They actually went to the Trooper Academy, got paid at a lower level, and if they did good, they would become an Alaska State Trooper, and we'd backfill that position. That kind of just faded away because it really didn't work, but we see it as able to work for the VPSO program, and we're looking at trying to get intent language in our budget request through the Senate side, through Senator Olson. I think we can do it statutorily, but I'd like somebody to say that we can do it. That way there's a little bit of back cover, because essentially they'd be at a higher level. They'd be able to rover around the whole state. Most likely they'll be armed, and they'll also be supervising the VPSOs in their area. So it would be not a sergeant, but it'd be a person above them with a higher level of training and a higher level of police powers to provide the services in rural Alaska. So we are looking at different avenues, even including getting a VPSO at a lower level and hoping. Because what happens is, and I think Representative Cronkin, since school teachers, once they graduate from high school, some of them have 2 or 3 years where they just don't know where they fit. So they end up doing something they shouldn't do, and then they can't get a good job, whether it's with us or any other place. We have to be able to try to capture those kids, I'll call them kids, right after graduation. We were looking at a way to get some of the kids from the communities after they graduated from high school into the VPSO program at a lower level to assist the current VPSO. So we are looking at different avenues to not only enhance the VPSO program, but get a higher level of VPSO.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Excuse me.
Representative Colm.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I did have a question. I just wanted to say thank you so much for giving us so much of your time and the subcommittee. And some of these issues we can't dig down in an hour and a half, but we've been able to dig into some of that. And I wanted to make sure the Finance Committee knows that there is some substantial ask through information systems because they are implementing their body-worn camera program, which is amazing since I'm from Anchorage and we seem to be struggling with that with APD. But I just wanted to commend you guys for getting that on board. I'm supporting all that funding for the cameras and the informational systems to support that. So thank you. My question is, and I know I've asked this before at the subcommittee, but I thought we should cover it here, is the vacancy rate of the troopers and maybe the vacancy rate of the wildlife troopers?
Through the chair, I'll let her answer it. But it's changed since the last time we talked because we went to a new month. So we do our vacancies monthly.
Okay.
So it won't be exactly what I probably told you a few weeks ago.
Through the chair, Representative Colum, Ledge Finance pulled us some vacancy numbers today that I can share with you. They won't necessarily be for troopers specifically. They would be for the component, and I can share that if you would like.
Sure.
For the Alaska State Trooper Detachments, which is where the majority of the troopers reside, this is a six-month fiscal year-to-date percentage rate, and that is, if I can read this line across, it's either 10 or 11%. It's 11%. The Alaska Wildlife Troopers is 10%, and that's for all positions, commissioned and civilian, in those budget components.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin, followed by Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I hope that maybe one of you might address you. In my office, I got a very hopeful view of where you hope to go. You gave me a vision around making sure that every village was somehow covered, and certainly that your VPSO numbers, I think at that time you had said double. I'd like to double them. And similarly, even more than that for the troopers in the long run, just to make sure that every Alaskan has access to an officer or VPSO when there is some sort of an emergency. And I was looking at this slide where you mentioned you're adding, I believe it was 5 full-time permanent, and thinking through how many years it's going to take for us to get there. And wondered if at some point you were thinking that we might need to ramp that up in terms of dollars to invest in this, and perhaps you strategically put it at this so that you were sure to get a yes. But I wondered, in just thinking about numbers of Alaskans getting coverage, if there is a sense that we're going to ramp up.
Through the chair. Department, we're talking trooper positions, has increased our numbers. We're still not up to our previous level at 328. We're currently at 320 authorized trooper positions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my ultimate goal was to get the troopers up to 415 and the wildlife troopers up to 400. And you know, realistically, again, you can give me those extra positions today. I don't think we could fill them. So it has to be a step by step. And, you know, we go through these ebbs and flows on even recruiting efforts right now. So we're starting an academy in February. And I'm not sure what our numbers are yet, but last year our numbers were really good. So
I have a follow up, please. Through the chair, I wondered if you could share with us, one question I didn't get answered, I didn't ask, is are there certain parts of Alaska that are more a challenge in terms of getting coverage? I remember years ago I was at Tanana Chiefs, for example, and I heard about a village right near the border of Canada that had no coverage, and what they were doing to do that. They were actually following any car that came into town. and figuring out whether or not they were a drug dealer and chasing them out of town. And I just, I think of that sometimes and wondered if you do have areas that you, how do you work up making sure that there's equity in terms of that sort of distribution of coverage?
Through the chair, I think the important thing is looking at the amount of crime, and especially violent crime. I think still, if you look in our state, the White K Delta still needs additional resources, not only in troopers, but BPSOs. I think if I remember the felony sex report, we had over 300 sexual assaults in the White K Delta last year. I think it was 328. And that's by far, other than Anchorage, that's by far the largest amount. Mm-hmm. And certainly, I call it TCC's area, Town Hall Chief Conference area, which is out of Fairbanks and all the villages north of there. I know that based on my time talking to them and the public safety summits I went to, that they're struggling, especially on the drug side. In fact, they purchased a drug dog for us, and they're actually purchasing a drug dog for one of their BPSOs. Meth is a huge problem in that community. I know that I was in the Bristol Bay region. I was in Togiak. We were hearing the same things, a lot of drugs. In fact, we just had a fairly substantial drug bust with drugs heading to Togiak. So Togiak has been an area of concern, certainly been a lot of communications with that community. So, you know, it's... Unfortunately, you know, Alaska is still, in a sense, Alaska, and, you know, people come here sometimes to hide and then do bad things. And, you know, it's our job to stay on top of it and hopefully prevent it. But we're still the greatest state, and I seem like it's a downer today, but we're still the greatest state in the nation. I mean, we can do such incredible things. And I tell the troopers this, you know, we're a small state, so you never know who you touch. So leave them with that shred of positive, because, again, we talk to everybody all the time. You just never know when you're on the airplane or at the store or you're visiting a community. You just never know who that person is that you're touching. And it's so important, and I think that's what separates the troopers from a lot of other law enforcement agencies, how we treat our people. I mean, what other agency goes to a village where there's a guy running around with a gun by themselves? You know, I mean, that's not normal in rural America. And, you know, I'm really proud of what the department does. I'm proud of the troopers and the staff that support the troopers. And the focus of our budget this year was not, we didn't ask for troopers this year. We wanted to beef up our professional civilian staff to support our troopers and support the department's mission. There's a lot of more things than just this uniform that our department does. We do backgrounds for healthcare nurses. We register sex offenders. That's a job that was really hard for us to fill at Anchorage headquarters, I'll tell you what. So we do a lot more than just go to arrest people. We do a lot more than that. This uniform's got so much symbol to it. This uniform's been around. I mean, everybody in this state knows when they see this uniform, that's an Alaska State Trooper. There's no question about it. You can be with a city police officer or a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service officer, but they know who the trooper is when he or she comes to the village. So it's something that all of this state should be proud of, not just me. I mean, you guys make it happen.
Well, I think we're going to make this one our last question, Representative Tomaszewski.
No pressure. Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I just want to commend you and your team for a very difficult job. And you mentioned the uniform. That is a very distinct uniform, and I'm glad you guys have the pride when you wear it and the job that you do. Just real quick question, though, on the VPSOs, you're sitting at 60-ish. And you wanted 120 as kind of the goal. How many villages, whatever, are slated out there to, like, have that presence? Is there a number somewhere on the total? And you may have covered this already, but...
I don't know that I have a number that needs to continue to grow. I will say every community that I've been to, that I visited,
they either want an Alaska State Trooper there or they want a VPSO program. I haven't had one VPSO. I haven't had one community come to me and say, we don't want that. Most all the communities that don't have anything, they want somebody. And I can probably give you that. I can tell you how many communities that we are actually serving. I just don't have that right now.
Okay, so no number of total, but
communities. I think pretty much if we can hire them, for the most part, a community will take them. And we've got 329 recognized tribes in Alaska, several unrecognized tribes, and most of them want some sort of law enforcement. I will say that we put a VPSO in Tyonek for the first time in a long time, and that's an unrecognized tribe. But they really wanted the VPSO, and we were able to work out the ability to do that. Even the city of Seldovia came and asked if they could have a VPSO. I mean, so the program continues to grow. At some point in time, I'd like to put a VPSO at the international airport to crack down on sex trafficking there, especially in the unsecure areas of the airport, because at least the VPSO, you know, everybody in the villages know who a VPSO is or what they look like by wearing a uniform. Right? And, you know, there's potentially, I'm not saying it's happening all the time, but there's potentially people preying on people that are coming from outside of the Anchorage Bowl area into that hub. And, you know, there's vulnerabilities there. And I'd like to see at some point in time a VPSO there. But that's just me. It hasn't happened yet. We're going to take care of the villages first.
Thank you.
All right. We'll send it, Co-Chair Edgman.
Yeah, just real quickly, I wanted to as well join Representative Tom Chesky and everybody else's commendations from around the table to the department and the job well done. And I just point out that last year we passed an omnibus VPSO bill, Senate Bill 81, that really was the work of a lot of different entities, and it really gave, I think, the VPSO program higher standing in statutes and, you know, along with increased pay and some opportunities for housing, and really just made the program, I think, more attractive for those that are interested in going out to a remote community or are from a remote community to be able to serve as a VPSO. But Commissioner, I wanted to thank you for coming to my office in the third week of January and meeting with myself and Senator Hoffman on the issue related to the length of Bristol Bay gill netters and the enforcement of a regulation that's been in place, I think, since early 50s, or its origination goes back to maybe 1952, and that is limiting the length of a Bristol Bay gill netter to 52 or 32 feet. But it's up to your department to actually go out and enforce that. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's a very difficult task, and I think you personally have been on the water yourself. But just wanted to put that on the record, and thank you, Co-Chair, for allowing me to do that, and appreciate your help on the issue.
Well, I want to add myself to the long line of people that are recognizing that you've been dealt a very difficult hand, and we appreciate what you do for the state of Alaska, and how you're all oftentimes our first line of defense, not just in, you know, crime and all of those things, but also the first social services that people see, because you're dealing with so many various issues that aren't exactly the things that we all think about when we think about law enforcement, but that you're dealing with social issues over and over and over again. So thank you for doing that. We know you're spread thin. And we also recognize that Alaska State Troopers are trained at a level better than anyone else in the country, probably more closely trained with the Canadian Mounties than any other entity in the country. So we appreciate your level of training, and we appreciate everything that you do out there, and recognize that you've been dealt a hard hand, and we appreciate that you being part of the team that you're working with, and we want to, we all want to see Alaska thrive and do better. And anyway, we appreciate you being here today. And it was a little more than a budget discussion, but that's Alaska. I guess I'll do my regular business. Thank you for being here. We have a meeting tomorrow. From the Department of Environmental Conservation, probably not as just as integral perhaps, but not as close to all of us every day. And we will be receiving a presentation from Commissioner Jason Bruni, and that will be tomorrow, Wednesday, February 22nd at 1:30 p.m. with no further business before the committee at 2:54, we are adjourned.